Climate change affects central bankers too. So is it time for a green monetary policy? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Carbon pricing, renewable energy, a Green New Deal. We're not short of policies intended to save us from catastrophic climate change. But should monetary policy be part of this effort? CEPR fellow Dirk Schoenmaker of the Rotterdam School of Management, Erasmus University, thinks so. He's just published a discussion paper that explains how the European Central Bank's policymaking could take the carbon intensity of assets into account and how this could work without compromising its mandate. And he's on the line now. Dirk, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
We're all aware of the economic chaos that climate change might create, but central bankers are appointed, so they've got to be market neutral. So isn't a green monetary policy overreach by definition?
It might seem so, but I looked at what market neutral means, and it means you buy a proportion of the market. And as it happens to be, carbon-intensive companies are also capital-intensive, like the big utilities and the big oil companies. And by just buying the market, you have a positive carbon bias in your portfolio, so you have more than average. And in that way, monetary policy is going the wrong direction. And that is my reason that I say we should do it differently. Mm. And a second reason is to go to carbon emissions is basically a task for all of us, for us as consumers, for companies. Of course, the government is in the lead, but central banks can also add their bit to it.
The central banks have mandates that say what they can and can't do. So how does the mandate of the European Central Bank compared to others in the amount of wriggle room that's available if they wanted to create green monetary policy?
Indeed, it is important to do it within the current mandate. I checked it. So, of course, the primary objective is price stability. And then they should support the economic policies of the European Union as a secondary objective. And reducing carbon emissions is an important economic policy of the European Commission. And if that does not interfere with price stability, they are allowed to do it. And you could even argue that they should do it. So there is space, there is wiggle room for them to do it.
So if they are going to do it, in what specific ways do you suggest they can intervene?
Yes, extremely important for monetary policy is to be general. So not to favor certain sectors, certain companies. We don't want that. So my approach is, I call it a tilting approach, less high carbon, and you do more low carbon. In my paper, I start off with, say, let's do 50% less high carbon assets, such as corporate bond and bank bonds, and 50% more low carbon corporate bonds and bank bonds.
But if they do that, what outcomes should they be targeting as well? Because they also need to work towards a specific outcome, don't they?
So first of all, think really straight targets for carbon emissions are really for the government itself. The key thing is for other actors like central banks, what can they contribute? And with my proposal to do this 50% more low carbon and 50% less high carbon assets, you could get a reduction of about 44% carbon emissions in the portfolio of the central bank. That's quite a bit.
My point on this, though, Dirk, is that seems somewhat arbitrary. Is there any way that we can establish that this is optimal?
What in the end is extremely important is to get the right policy mix. That means the mix between fiscal policy and monetary policy. So if fiscal policy would work ideally, then there is far less need for the central bank to act. And in this case, fiscal policy is, of course, a carbon tax. The current rates in the ETS system are far too low. They are 20 to 25 euros. And a proper carbon tax would be about 50 euro. So there is now quite a bit of space for the central bank to act. So that is my proposal of this 50% tilting. If the carbon tax would go up, we could reduce the tilting.
When you're intervening, it does have distributional consequences, doesn't it? So how can we avoid some kind of intervention creep from this?
Yeah, so there is not a distribution consequence between certain groups in society, but there is a distribution consequence for high and low carbon companies because low carbon assets become more eligible because the ECB are buying more of them or taking more as collateral. So they would have a lower funding cost, a better liquidity, and high carbon would have less liquidity and a higher funding cost. And that effect is exactly what is intended, because then high carbon companies would become higher funding cost. And when they face the higher funding cost, they can take the decision, I reform my production technology to lower carbon. That costs me some money, but I save then money on my funding, because when I switch to low carbon, I have lower funding costs. And that's exactly what you want.
Will there not be pressure, though, to start adopting monetary policies that would affect other desirable consequences that at the moment they don't get involved with?
Yeah, that's a big discussion item. And when I prepared the CEPR discussion paper, I presented my paper at different central banks and at different conferences. And in the end, it is very clear that these climate policies of the European Union, it is the Commission, it is the Council, it is the European Parliament, is a real consensus. And they are already working for years on it with very clear targets. So there is really unanimous policy call here across the board. And in that way, there is policy space for the ECB to work alongside this policy call. This is really an extremely important policy call, given the priority the European Union is giving to reducing carbon emissions. They could take this one on as one of the most important policies where they can contribute.
We have evidence at the moment that investors are not effectively pricing in carbon risk. So can you be sure that this policy would transmit to changes in behaviour?
Yeah, and that's the good news. So I looked at other studies where certain items of assets became eligible for collateral, which were not eligible before. And then we see an 8 basis points difference in cost, in funding cost. That is an improvement. And given that I don't go for 100% but for a 50% approach, we derive that we would get a 4 basis points funding advantage for low carbon companies compared to high carbon companies.
Do you have a prediction for what the macro effects of this would be on growth in Europe's economy?
I think on growth, I don't really expect any differences, because you go from one to another type of technology. So you keep on working, but you only switch the way you are working. What effect you would get at a macro level is that you speed up the transition to low carbon technology. You stimulate companies to switch to low carbon technology quicker, because that will give them funding costs. So economic growth in itself will not be affected. Although if Europe is quicker in doing this, low carbon technology could become an export product for other continents who wants to use the technology or buy the products of the companies in Europe. So it could become an export product.
At the moment, all the interventions in the market are on the fiscal side. So would a policy like this complement those existing climate change policies, or should it replace some of them?
No, really complement. So fiscal policies and regulation by the Commission and by the European Council is first best. And as economists, a real consensus that a proper carbon tax is really first best. But we all know about the political difficulties to get there. It is not easy to implement. So what I always say, you take fiscal policy as given. So you see, what do we have as an ETS carbon price, 20 to 25 euros at the moment. And then you say, okay, I take that as given. And that's about half what is needed. Then I look, what can we add on the monetary policy side? So it starts always with the fiscal side, which has the preference.
I imagine, Dirk, when you went to the central banks and you presented it to them, then their main concern would probably have been that this does not undermine price stability. Do you have evidence that price stability would be conserved if we had these type of policies?
Yes, and rightly, that is an overriding concern. For example, another type of policy, high employment, if you pursue that, then you have the risk of inflation, and which is negative for price stability. For an employment target, we are quite clear we don't want that, because that could interfere. I checked the same for this low carbon bias, and there we didn't see any trade-off, because it is basically about tilting, speeding up the adoption of low carbon technologies. So the good news is there are no trade-offs.
Central banks also rely on international coordination. Part of the success of these regimes is that all the major central banks are pursuing very similar policies. So are we ever going to see a green Fed, and does that matter?
First of all, for the interest rate setting process, coordination is extremely important because that is the relative price of the currencies. The type of assets each central bank takes in its own jurisdiction, the Bank of England, the ECB, the Fed, each has its own way of working. So you could do it your own way. But of course, if you do it together, you make more impact. And at the moment, certain central banks, the Bank of England, the Bank of France, the Dutch Central Bank, the Bundesbank, are quite active on the climate front, not yet for monetary policy, but in the thinking. I would expect the ECB and the Bank of England starting this off, not in the near future, but a bit later, once they get used to it. The Fed would be later. The San Francisco Fed is already looking at these issues. So I think in the medium term, the Fed will also come on board.
Is there not the potential, Dirk, that this might be a great idea, but one that just doesn't get any traction politically in 2019? I imagine that central bankers would come under a lot of pressure from lobbyists on behalf of high carbon industries and populist politicians. So do you think that this is a danger? Everyone thinks it's a great idea, but it just can't happen because it's not feasible.
Yeah, but if we look a little bit at the issues, like we had discussions in the European Parliament about emission standards for cars, and they have been reduced. And the good news is this type of policy of tilting is not costly, apart from the high carbon companies. But it's exactly what we want, is they face higher funding costs. But there is no impact on citizens. So in that sense, it is not a costly policy. And then you're right, the current environment is very difficult to do new things. But then the narrative, while we are doing this, is extremely important. So I think the European Commission and the Council are quite strong on the narrative for reducing carbon emissions with very clear targets. And I think more or less they are succeeding in that. If the central banks would enter this area, they should also have the narrative ready. And the narrative should really be, this is an issue for all of us. The politicians, the Commission, Parliament and the Council are in the lead. But at least we make sure that we are not counteracting these policies by having a carbon bias, what they have at the moment. So at least we align our policies with the overall policies of the European Union. So that is one way of explaining it clearly before you start doing it. And I agree with you, that's extremely important. We should not just do it in a technical way, but we should explain it with a proper narrative.
Well, I'm sure it's not the last time we're going to hear about this. So Dirk, thank you very much.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to do.
So, concerned citizens, central bankers, lobbyists and populists, download this paper. It affects you. It's called Greening Monetary Policy and it's by Dirk Schoonmaker. It is DP13576 at the CEPR. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. There's a new episode every week, so follow us on your podcast platform. And there's 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.